From being a drug addict to now being addicted to life, we're going to speak to former celebrity and radio host Joe Grande, a good friend and family member, who tells us his crazy story about how he went from doing drugs every day to now having a family and being insanely happy in a new life, new love, and new faith. As always, check out the song at the end of the episode called Now That You Know. We love you guys so much. Here's Nights at the Roundtable. And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy, my beautiful queen, Angela Johnson. And today at the table, we got family, really is what it is.
Yep.
Mr. Joe Grande. What up, Jojo?
That's really for real, though, too. It's like family.
It is. It's family. It's nothing but.
I actually put my head up right now when you said family. You're like, you're right. I'm like, how is he going to introduce me? You're right. Like family.
It is family.
I mean, I did marry you guys, for God's sakes.
You did.
He did marry us.
You guys, Joe Grande, a.k.a. Big Joe, if you're from the Bay Area. Yay, Bay Area. Hey, that sounds familiar. Inside jokes. Okay, so Joe Lopez, mi primo. Here's the thing. Joe's my family. He's my cousin. When I first moved to LA to pursue my dream to be an actress, before I moved to LA, I called Joe and I was like, hey, I want to move to LA and be an actress. Can I crash on your couch? And then Joe was like, yeah, you could live with me, but you're not going to sleep on no couch. I'm going to get a bigger place. And so he goes and he ends up buying a condo, right? And then like right before I move out, he calls me. He's like, hey, you better for real come out here because I just bought a bigger place.
And I can't pay the mortgage by myself. So I'm expecting your payment. Yeah. And not expecting your payment like you're going to slip on a payment. Like I'm expecting your payment.
Like landlord style.
Like don't mess up.
And here's the thing.
Or I'm going to call the homies.
I had just only lived at home with my mom. I've never lived outside of my house. So I never paid rent ever in my life. And then I moved to LA and Joe's charging me $750 to rent the room.
That's a good price if you think about it.
Now it's a good price. Back then, that was a little expensive.
That was still
you didn't
a
give
good
me
price.
No hook.
No, that was still a player price. I mean, I even gave you a bed.
16 years ago? Oh, you did. Yeah, okay. So
it came furnished.
I lived with Joe. That's where I started my career. And Joe,
and your adulthood.
What, my adulthood? I mean, we have so many stories. This podcast could go on for 4.5 hours just talking about our stories. But so I was a cheerleader for the Oakland Raiders. When I moved out here, Joe was on Wild 94. Oh, well, Hot 97. Let's take it back all the way. Bay Area Hot 97.
Yes, Hot 97.7, the South Bay's hottest radio station with the big red lips.
Uh-huh. And then went on to Wild 107, which turned into Wild 94.9. Anyways, he gets fired. We'll probably talk about that maybe. Ooh, I'm not quite sure.
I can get fired.
But he gets fired. Listen, he was not sober and making a lot of bad decisions with his life.
I was sober when I got fired, but that's a different story.
Oh, shoot. Okay, so then he moves to LA and he's on Power 106, the biggest like radio station out here in LA. And he's, you know, he has like radio events that he has to go to. He has to make club appearances. He has to do whatever appearances he has to do. Well, when I moved out here, I was still a Raiderette. So I would put on my Raiderette uniform and I would go with Joe to all of his appearances. And it would be like, Joe Grande's here with one of the Oakland Raiderettes.
Well, no, to backstory though, before even when you were a Raiderette, I was doing the Raider pregame show on AM 570.
Yes.
So I was actually the host of the Oakland Raiders pregame radio show from Los Angeles with me, Christian Okoye, and another gentleman by the name of A. Martinez, and also Vic the Brick Jacobs. So that made sense of why I even made you come a lot of times in your, you know, come on, Ange, let's go.
So it would be like, you know, whatever tire outlet store during Power 106.
I would get a lot
DJ
of bang for the buck.
And I would come out with Joe and I would sign and sell my calendars. And we were both hustling out here and just, you know, chasing the dream. And that's how I started in LA pursuing my dream to be an actress. I came and Joe let me crash. He let me rent a room. And Joe was, you know, my support system out here in LA when I first came. He was my first therapist. He taught me so much. And we joke now, like sometimes I'll go, thanks, Dad, or, you know, things like that, just because he's been such a presence in my life. But what I want everyone to hear listening to this right now is his story, who he is, some of the things that he's been through. I mean, right now we're sitting in his office, which you look on the wall and you have signed jerseys to him from everybody, from Joe Montana, the late, great Kobe Bryant,
just Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, Eminem's plaque,
Magic Johnson,
Dr. Dre.
You have a picture of Aaliyah blowing a candle out of his butt. There's so many stories.
I mean, this whole room is filled with all personal stories. None of these were bought either, which is great.
I mean, they all say to Joe.
Oh my God,
yeah, exactly. They're all to me.
Aaliyah is blowing a candle out of your butt. That's funny.
Tell that story real quick, and then we'll jump into
it. So, it's my 25th birthday. I don't know if you know this story, Manuel.
No.
I'm working at Wild 94.9. And I'm partying at the time. I'm not sober yet by no means. And I go, you know what? I talk to Aaliyah on the side real quick. I go, can you come up and sing me happy birthday? It's my birthday. You know, and we did the morning show. It's called The Doghouse. Highest rated morning show till this day in Bay Area Morning History Radio. So, of course, everyone like loves us and does whatever we ask. So she's like, yeah, I'll come do it. Cool. She's right there on the side. I never tell her what I'm about to do. So I go, cool. Hey, guys, everybody, it's my birthday. I got my boys JV, Hollywood, Elvis up there. I want everybody to sing me happy birthday. But hold on. Let me get on my birthday suit. I take my shirt off. I lay down. My boy takes my shorts off and my underwear to where I'm butt-ass naked, face down on stage. They put like a 12-inch candle in my booty hole, light it, and I say, Aaliyah, all I want you to do is come on out here and sing me happy birthday and blow out this candle. Dog, she did it for real. She wow. comes out there, sings me happy birthday, blows out the candle. It was the dopest time. I see her a few months after that. She walks by. I go, what up, girl? You remember me? She goes, how could I ever freaking forget you? I will never, ever in my life forget
you. Your hairy, ugly ass.
It's not hairy. Maybe a couple bumps, but not hairy.
Sick.
So, yeah, that's one of the pictures up in here, and the Notorious B.I.G. ones and all the other good ones. And
Joe.
Ice Cubes and, you know.
You have
E40 in the click. LL Cool J, but
I mean,
who's dropping names?
Everybody. I
John
mean,
Cicada,
I Will mean, Smith. It's fine. It's
Apollonia.
I mean, Ice Cube. Jennifer Lopez. It's fine. Who cares? Stevie Wonder. Whatever.
I gave it to him, and he never looked at the picture. Son of a gun.
I
swear to God, though, they never said they've seen it. He's seen it. That's what they told me.
Thank you so much, Joseph. So tell everybody, like, give us a little bit of your backstory of who you are, some of like how you grew up, and then how you got to here where we're at right now.
Yeah, because this episode is entitled "This Too Shall Pass." So we're gonna be talking about seasons, importantly through Joe's life, because there's been a lot of seasons that he's gone through, up, down, big, small, you know, stress, not stress. So take us from the beginning.
Well, first off, I just want to say it's a privilege to be on Nights at the Round Table with you two.
Appreciate
you. I'm excited about this and excited to be asked questions and go on. So my story is I was born son of Richard, son of Helen, in 1972.
Son of a bitch. Sorry, go ahead.
Son of a bitch! You fat bastard! I'm the baby of the family. I was my mom's corazito, her mijo, her corazón. And born and raised in San Jose, California, never left it. I was a 95127 East Side San Jose boy, thinking that was my clique and that was my hood. I grew up very loved being the baby of the family and being very spoiled. It was love, not with financial gifts, but I was definitely spoiled with love because I was the baby and got away with a lot of things. When I say I get away with a lot of things, I'm going to have to jump years to years to give you an example. Meaning when my oldest brother went to prison when I was 10, well, you know, I couldn't do too much worse. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then when my other brothers, they all went to jail at an early age, I probably couldn't do worse. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. I first started smoking weed when I was 6 years old. And
wow,
you know
that is Austin's age right now.
Exactly, my daughter is actually six as well. My
six
second
years
daughter.
Old. How did that even?
My brother was 16 and I was 6, and my parents went out of town and they were playing the double Dutch bus. And I remember being at the house and they had a little joint and they hit it and they go, "Hey man, the one is for you, want to hit this?" I go, "Yeah, I'll hit that." And all I remember is dancing around and them giving me money. And after that, it was, you know, game on. Oh, I'd always smoke weed from 6 on. So damn. I smoked weed from 6 on until I, you know, passed the story up. I got sober at the age of 26 because it went from 6 to everything else and I was a garbage can. So it didn't matter. You put it in front of me, pill, line, whatever, shot. Let's rock and roll, baby. So, you know, when you grew up like that,
wow,
it became very weird. And when I say weird, it was because that was kept a secret from my parents, right? So I didn't tell my parents I smoked weed when I was younger. I mean, I did when I got older, but, you know, I didn't to where I was like, "Hey, guys, I smoke weed." They're like, "You smoke weed?" I'm like, "What does it matter? Leave me alone." Mm. Like, I work, I pay my own bills. Shut
right,
up.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like I ever looked at my parents and said, "Yes, I smoke weed and I do coke, crank and crystal and acid and mushrooms and heroin and everything else that you put in front of me." Hmm. I didn't say that, but you knew because I damn near said that on the radio when I was working on the doghouse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Hey guys, I've been up for 4 days. How's it going? Is there any hookers out there that want to meet me for lunch?" The crazy thing is the request lines would ring.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, as I jump from, you know, early on to on, there's, I mean, there's so many dynamics of where you can go with how that story was and grew up. But, you know, I was very proud San Jose raised type of kid because that was the type of neighborhood that we grew up in. You know, it's if you're from the East Coast or something, you're from Brooklyn or you was from L.A. and you was from East Los. I look at East Side San Jose very similar to those type of environments because I was very proud mm-hmm. to be from the East Side.
That's right.
You know, and be from San Jose, period. You know, and it wasn't until I got older that I realized that, you know, my ways of looking at that have changed, but I still fight with that proudness and that weirdness of, "What do you mean, fool? Oh, I'm San Jose, dog. What?
Yeah.
I can still go there." So when I see cats that are young doing that, I go, "I get it. I mean, I get it. It's our neighborhood. It's what we did. It's who we are, but it's not really who you are." So it's a fun factor of where I come from like that. And I mean, there's so many dynamics from getting sober and this and that, but from the early stages of life, growing up from going to Lindale to McCollum to Joseph George to James Lick, then San Jose City and San Jose State. And, you know, and as I go through that line and I think of where I come from, I'm the first in my family of all generations to graduate college.
Wow.
You know, so of everybody, my mom just barely didn't even graduate from high school. My dad didn't graduate from high school. My dad died working at Home Depot. You know, my mom did hair at an early age, but most of the time growing up, my mom was disabled. So she broke her back, ironically, you ready for this one? I don't even know if you know this one, Ange. My mom broke her back when she was working at San Jose State when she was feeding the 49ers. So my mom was cool with O.J. Simpson, dog, which is crazy because I remember meeting O.J. as a kid. And my mom's bestie used to live out here, and they used to date back in the day too. So when we'd come back and forth and my mom would see him, like O.J. and all these cats would be so cool with me. And my mom used to feed him and all this stuff. So it was like I remember these young memories of O.J.'s and all these cats from the Niners. And they used to practice at San Jose State, ironically, back in the day. So my mom broke her back there, and that was when I was in young junior high, like third grade. So third, fourth, fifth, my mom's was been disabled ever since. So she never had a job after that. Wow. So meaning she was always sick, and then she got diabetes. So when I grew up too, we grew up very much the household that would have the ambulance there periodically, which I never knew how much that affected me until I got older and did a lot of therapy where it's like, that crushed me. Like, you know, "Oh, Joe, your mom all right? I seen the ambulance at your house again." Yeah, her BSL dropped, you know, so she had to do this and that and yada, yada, yada. Not thinking it took a toll on me, but like I started off, I was the baby of the family and I loved my mom to death and my mom was everything to me. So, you know, it really took a toll. And on top of all the other dysfunctional things that happened in my household that made me close my eyes to things and think, "Oh, poor me," or "That sucks," or "This sucks." So
how old were you when you got sober and why?
I was 26 years old when I got sober, and it was 3 months till the day my mother passed away. And I remember driving home from San Francisco to San Jose, and just off the 101 freeway off University, there's a little liquor store on the right-hand side that I was always pulling over and getting a six-pack because I was halfway home, thinking I lived downtown San Jose. I worked in San Francisco. I could drink a six-pack and be home, and I'm cool. I'm straight. No big deal. On top of them, always smoking a blunt in one hand, doing a line in the other. Always had either coke, crank, and crystal in my pockets because coke all day, you know, Crystal on the more early time because it lasts longer. Crank middle of the day, coke at night, and then smoking blunts throughout. And then by the time I'm driving home, let me drink some beer so I can kind of calm down and balance it off. That's literally how my cycle went for a long time.
Wow.
And hence, that's why I got 8 fake teeth. Hello, don't do it, kids. It's not worth it. Fake teeth Louie over here, boy. Keep partying up. It's not worth it. $25,000 later in my mouth. Anyhow, I'm driving home literally 3 months to the day my mom passed. And I had this, what I called finally after, a spiritual awakening of this feeling of going, mijo, what are you doing? You're going to die. And I'm like, what the hell? And I literally thought I'd snorted something with some heroin in it or something. I started like questioning everything I'm thinking and feeling, going, how long ago did I do a bump? Wait a minute, it couldn't have been. Was it that? Maybe it's just kicking in now. Wait a minute, I just got done smoking like a half a blunt and I'm about to pull over so I can have the other half after I'm drinking a beer. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, but I'm not that twisted yet. Wait a minute, it's like a Wednesday. I ain't been up that late. I've already went to bed on Monday and Tuesday. I usually go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I ain't been crashed that long. Like I've been sleeping. And this doesn't make sense to me. I was like the weirdest druggie. Like I try to balance everything out. Not only that, I was still
I was the fattest druggie
because I do a line.
Organic druggie.
Yeah, no. I'd go do a bump and then force myself to eat a cheeseburger because I don't want to be a tweaker looker. So I'm gonna be fat. And I was still so fat that I was the only one that could do crystal meth and still eat an ultimate cheeseburger. Like who does that? McFatty over here. So
fattest tweaker.
I mean. So as I get this spiritual awakening that I called later, or just a bad bump that I thought I did, which happened to be my mom talking to me, I kind of was like, well, what do you want me to do? And then she says, call Matthew Castaneda, who you guys know very well.
Yeah.
Our primo.
My cousin.
And Matt's been my best friend for many, many years, since like junior high, right into high school, went to high school together, college together, we played football together, all this good stuff. I just seen him 3 months before that, and for the last few months he'd come around, and I remember seeing him at my mom's service and saying, you want to hit this blunt? No. You want to hit this hand? No. Okay, whatever. Oh, wait a minute. You ain't been partying for a while, huh? He's like, nah. I'm like, well, what you doing? Nothing, man. How you been, Joe? More on me, which was great. And then I realized he was hanging out with everybody. Then he kept coming around my house after he went to my mom's celebration, and he never would smoke still. And then I was like, dog, what are you like? What's going on? I mean, I've done a lot of drugs with this guy, and I drank a lot of drinks with him. We buried one of our best friends when he turned 21, our friend Rich, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just been through a lot of stuff together that, you know, that's my dog. I mean, he's been my best man at my wedding both times, for God's sakes. I mean, not one, but two. But, you know, but at that time, he was that good of a friend already. And so he goes, finally goes, Joe, no. I kept questioning, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? No, man, I'm going to AA. And I was like, oh, my God. So let me tell you about my first AA experience so that you'll understand what I asked him. My job sent me to AA about 4 years before that, at least, when I was working at Wild 94.9. Joe, you're going too crazy. I go, shut your mouths. We're the number one ranked morning show in the Bay Area. We've kicked Howard Stern's ass. We're making everybody more money than a little bit. Eat a dick. And they said, if you want your job, you need to go to an AA meeting. You need some help. You're like off the hook crazy. Whatever. Where's this meeting at? I'll go. San Francisco, at this church, on the bottom, noon. Bam, bam, I go. Here I am with green hair, pierced nose ring, silver front tooth, big old hoops in my ears, and my nose, just bleached eyebrows. Not a tweaker at all. Go to this meeting. I see all these dudes hugging. And all these dudes talking. And I go, my job did not send me to something like this in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. These dudes are just, I'm not gay. What's their problem? I was so naive to thinking what AA was. I thought it was a gay organization. But I stayed for the hour, went back and said, yo, man, I went to that meeting, but I'm cool. I'll take it easy for a while. So I stayed sober for a little while, like 4.5 months. At that time, 4+ years back before I finally hit it, right? As Matt says, I go to AA. I go, but you're not gay? He goes, he laughs. What are you talking about? I go, dude, I know your girlfriend. What do you mean? What do you go to AA for? He goes, what are you talking about? I go, what are you talking about? I went to one of those meetings, dude. It's gay. They're all gays there. He goes, what are you talking about? I swear to God, Matt, I went to the one in San Francisco. This is where it was at. Everyone's hugging and blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. He goes, Joe, that's not what it is. Are you sure, Matt? Because I know my scene. And you know when you're that loaded and twisted, you just can't see. Reality is so far from reality. So that was like a Wednesday, whatever. Okay, cool. We talked. Then I go back to work and I'm driving home and it's a Thursday. And that's when that spiritual awakening happened. I call Matt again. Finally, like realizing Matt's sober. My mom's telling me to call Matt. Okay, Matt's not gay. I think I can call him and we can work this out. I don't know what I need to work out. I don't even know what I got to tell him. But whatever. I call him and he's like, I go, Matt, I don't know, man. I don't even know how to explain this. I just, like, can we hang out? So he comes by my spot downtown San Jose. We chill, we kick it. And I'm like, dude, I think I need some help. Like, I don't know. I think I'm doing too much. Hmm. I've already explained how much methamphetamines I'm doing on top of pills, on top of everything else. It's just, I'm a garbage can of anything. I mean, literally, if you're like, oh, I'm taking these pills for my backup, can I have one? I'll try one. Why not? Like, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Wow. Guy, girl, it didn't matter. I would just try whatever you had. Cool, I'll take one. And he goes,
birth control?
Yeah, okay. Totally. Swear to God. Didn't matter. Matter of fact, I'll snort it. Let's go. Let's go. Just and Matt goes, you want to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I'm like, oh, no. Why not? Let's go. So I go to this meeting, and it's in Campbell at this church, and it's like four times the size of the meeting. It was huge, like 200-plus men, all men's meeting. And I remember first hearing, and this is where I finally got the message. And it was so crazy because it was like, look for the similarities, not the differences. Hmm. You know, 90 meetings in 90 days, build a foundation, get a sponsor, do the steps. Then a gentleman walks up there and goes, I remember coming to these meetings and being afraid for anybody to know who I am because I play for the San Jose Sharks. And I'm like, I'm on the radio and I don't want nobody to know who I am. Mm. I'm a loser now. Wow. And I'm a dirtbag because I can't drink and handle. I don't even think because I can handle. I just thought I was a pussy. And every bad word I can call myself, that's what I thought people were that didn't party. But he hit me. And this guy spoke to me. And then at the end of the meeting, this old man comes up to me that was like white-haired, small. And at that meeting, he was on the stage and he said, and he closed the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, he says, for me, to use is to die. So therefore, I'm not going to use today. And I heard that one. And he comes up to me. And I'm like, how does this dude find me with 250 people in this room? And why are you talking to me? I'm feeling like a nervous wreck. I'm shaking, literally. Have a hat on because I had green hair. And I don't want nobody to see me or recognize me. Probably a hoodie on my head with my hat. And the guy comes up and he goes, do you have a big book? And I go, no. He goes, you know what you know about this big book? And I go, no. And he opens the first page and he goes, you know nothing. That's what you know because you haven't read it. So if you read this big book, it might save your life. Huh. I took that challenge and felt a challenge from this old man. And I liked how aggressive he was with me. And it made me feel like, I like you. I like that type of behavior. I like man toughness. Talk, football coach, get your ass out here, boy. Can you do this or not?
Yeah.
I like that. So it spoke to me. Not everybody likes that, right? And then another guy comes up. His name was Jim. And he goes, hey, man, he grabs a Bic and he writes Jim in there. And I was like, oh, wow, cool, Jim. And I got my Bic book. Is it right over there? I think it is not. It's in my other closet. I thought I had my Bic book right here where I could show you. So then that was Thursday. Come Friday, I go to another meeting. So I hear 90 meetings in 90 days. That Thursday night, though, background, I go in the parking lot with Matt, and I cried for 3 hours in that parking lot with Matt.
Wow.
Can't believe my life's come to this, and I had to be at work early in the morning because I did morning radio.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's a time-consuming thing. Let me try to get some rest before I go. And then I remember going, Matt, will you be my sponsor? They said, I need a sponsor. And he goes, no, you need to do what this means and go. You have to find a similar story, somebody that you like, and go to some random man and trust him that he's going to get you through this. That's what I had to do too. I'm like, you bastard. He goes, but I'll go to 90 meetings in 90 days with you. And I'll walk you. I'll walk with you. And I was like, okay, cool. So Friday night we go. Saturday, we go to another morning meeting. And then by that afternoon, I'm at my house and now I'm 3 days sober and I'm literally shaking at the house, like shaking at the cold shakes. I'm sweating.
Wow.
I'm crying. I'm like withdrawing crazy. I need some meth. I need some weed. I need a drink. I need something. And wow. I'm just a freaking mess. I call Matt. I can't get a hold of him. Before you know it, I'm literally on my hands and knees. I'm up my carpet looking for some crank or just something just to wet my lips with, or looking for a CD just to lick, just to like get this shaking itch out of me, right? And then I look and that big book falls on the ground and it opens up to that front page and it said Jim. I grab my phone, dial that 408 number that's still in my book on that front page. I said, Jim? He goes, yeah. I go, this is Joe. I met you at that meeting on Thursday. He goes, hey, what's up, Joe? What can I do, man? How you doing? I don't know how I'm doing. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I can't think straight. I just start crying and bawling to this dude, right? And he's like, talked me off the edge. And it made me realize afterwards, as I tell this story every time, is that's what it takes. You have to pick up the phone and reach for help sometimes. When you're in that situation, you call people that are there to help you freely. And this is what Alcoholics Anonymous gave to me freely. This dude didn't charge me. There was no Venmo. He didn't say I had to take him out to eat. I didn't have to do nothing. But he helped me and he walked me through it. And then he goes, you know, you can go to another meeting tonight. What do you mean, dog? I already went to one today. You can do two meetings in one day? Oh, snap. I didn't know that. Like, you know, just naive, like how much you can put in yourself, of how many meetings, how much help you can put in. Like, I didn't know. So I'm like, cool. And he's like, let me look up where one's out for you. Happened to be on the east side. I was going to Campbell on the west side of town because I didn't want to go to meetings on the east side of town because, Manuel, you may not know this, but I was like an east side. I mean, even on the other side of town, people knew who I was. But on the east side, it was like, Big Joe, Big Joe. I couldn't walk into the grocery store without cats just knowing just from my localness,
right?
Let alone being on the radio. So it was the local kid who got on the big radio station that was on the morning show that, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to, I don't want to do nothing on the east side that shows I'm a quitter, shows I'm an AA, shows that I'm a pussy. No way. But that was the meeting that started at 4 o'clock that I had to go to. I'm a mess. All right, I'm about to go to this meeting. So I roll over there. I'm all shaky, but I'm trying to get my bearings. I walk up. And there's this veterano cholo with this big old long mustache with a big old rollo. And he's all tank topped up with tattoos everywhere. Looked like straight out of American Me. I walk up and I go, what's up? He's like, what's up, Holmes? What's up, man? He goes, hey, are you the homie from the radio station? And I'm all, no! Yes, that's me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sober. And then I go, I bunk your chest up. I go, yeah, that's me. Go, hey, are you sober? Like, you know, like just straight judging this dude. Like, you're sober? He goes, yeah, Holmes. I go, how long? He goes, 16 years. I said, what? I can't imagine dudes like you being sober. You look like one of these cats that's smoking PCP on the corner by my house that I grew up on.
Lifting up Jeeps for no reason.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, dude, how do you become sober? Like, I don't get that. So I went to that meeting and I never walked in because I talked to this guy for like 3 hours right there on the bench.
Wow.
He became my sponsor. He walked me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, took me to NA meetings, did everything. This brother named Jack, and then he passes away and dies on me. No. Randomly gets sick.
How long?
This was about 2 years in.
Wow.
And then I had to get another sponsor, and that was hard because I already put my faith and trust in one, thinking I did this. Mm-hmm. How do I find the next one? And then I found the next one. And then I just realized, and after doing the 12 steps and, you know, going back to church and finding God, because there was a time in my life that I just hated God. I cursed him bad. F you, you mother. I mean, everything you could think of to say about somebody, that was God to me. You took my mom. She was 52 years old. You mother, everything you could imagine. And, you know, this is just terrible. Then once I got sober, and then even funny, when I went to church, which was Jubilee, the first day I walked in there, I hear the pastor say, I grew up with BYOD, bring your own dope. And I was like, he did not just say that on the pulpit. Who is this dude speaking to me, making me feel like I'm in the right place? I grew up that way. It is bring your own dope, and now let's hang out and talk. And then I meet with this cat and we hit it off. And ironically, he went to James Lick High School, where I went to high school at, of course, many moons before. And then before you know it, I'm like real cool with the pastor and MC Hammer and this and that. And then I knock up one of the girls at church. And I mean, it's a side story, but true. But I mean, hey.
Oh, listen.
That's what happened. But man. I mean, so that's a little bit about how I got sober, and everything I said is true so far. So,
and this too shall pass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at my life, even back then, I thought, I used to think of this Mace line, Mace the rapper. I'm a thug. I'm a die high.
Yeah.
And I used to be like, F it. I'm a die high. I don't even care about life that much. I used to feel that way and think that way. And when I used to think that way, I used to think I didn't care that whatever pill, whatever, whatever, and abusing my body and women and prostitution, it just everything didn't matter. I took it to the next, beyond the next level of what was okay when I was using. There was no line that was appropriate or inappropriate from a lot of things I would, you know, have to even do when I did the morning show, like even going to something. I don't know why this is coming to my head and it sounds ridiculous and disgusting and crazy. But I remember going to the circle jerk and covering a circle jerk contest at the in San Francisco because this is what I had to do. And it was like, you know, I mean, I didn't partake in these things or nothing like that, but it's just the way of living, of doing and acting, there was just no consequence and no remorse. Mm-hmm. And now at my life at 21 plus years sober, in 2020, the year, like, I live my life through a damn near pigeonhole where I feel guilty for things I do and I'm so much different than the man that I used to be. But it took me a long time, a lot of therapy, you know, a lot of working on myself. And I always used to remember thinking as I'm going through all that and as I look back at my life, I always think this phrase has really been a part of my life and it's this too shall pass. There's been times when I wanted to die. And thank God I didn't make a permanent decision for a temporary problem. Hmm. Because life and the things that we go through are temporary. They're not permanent. So when we think, I need to end this. I can't pay my bills. I can't do that. I can't. It's temporary. Mm-hmm. This too shall pass.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you're not going to find the promised land if you don't ride it out and learn from it. And take these bumps and bruises. And no one says it's easy. And I'm not claiming it is. I'm saying there's a lot of things. I've had a lot of stuff to where, oh my God, I had four houses at one time. Lost them all. You know, a bankruptcy, foreclosures, this and that. It's just stuff.
Hmm.
There ain't no reason to sit there and be like, I need to kill myself or end something over it for stuff.
Mm.
Like, dog, that's just stuff.
Yeah.
Who am I as a person? Who am I trying to be? What am I trying to teach my seed? And thank God I've lived through these pains and past of, you know, going through these things, because now I feel like a dad of three kids that I love to death, and I feel like all three of them come to me for a lot of big things.
Yeah,
because they know that dad keeps it 100
four of
at
us.
Every level.
Four of us come to you.
The crazy part is though, Manuel, and everyone listening, and as crazy as it's going to sound, it's so true. Angela's like my oldest kid. Like, for real, for real. Like, when she moved in with me, dog, there'd be so many deep things. And even till this day, like, we have these deep, serious conversations. And she'll come to me, whether it's first, second, third, fourth, or last. But she'll come to me with some deep stuff sometimes where I feel like, you know, she needs the anointment of God to run through me to say something. Because I don't know what she's going to ask me, but I know that I've lived my life and worked so much to therapy and worked on myself so much that I have a lot of people in life that come to me for random things like that, because I try to stay open to listen to what God wants me to say, or my experience will give some examples to, you could try this or you could try that. I mean, I don't know what you're going to do, but this is how I foresee it, you know, or maybe I see what you're hearing and I see this. And, it's just funny that you say you're the fourth, because there's a lot of times in life. And vice versa, dog, because you've been there. When my dad died, Angela was with me. Putting together all the pictures when my dad died right next to me at his service. My mom was already dead, so she didn't get to do that. But she, you know, she made fun of her a lot. But other than
that, so stupid.
But she was there for my dad, and she was there for when my niece died. And my niece was 9 months old when she passed. And that was just horrific. Died from, you know, leukemia, with the physical look and everything was just crazy what I went through. It was a time where I almost relapsed because I wanted to smoke some weed with my brother at the time when we walked out of the hospital. And it was right after she died. When I say right after, I mean minutes after she died. And he's holding her in her arms. And I'm like, I want to smoke. I need something to take this fucking pain away from my body right now.
Yeah.
I can't deal with this pain. But I didn't, because this too shall pass. That time when I wanted to get loaded, it passed. But Angela was there with me then. You know, Angela was there with me when I first got married to my first wife. She was there. She was there when I got married to my, when my first wife kicked her out of the house.
Let's tell that story. This is a good one.
How about this? She wasn't there.
Wait, when you got, you got kicked out of the house?
Okay, so remember the how we started this episode with the loving story of Joe let me move in.
I had nothing to do with Joe,
though. And he bought a house, and I rented a room from him. Well, he ends up meeting this girl, right? And they end up getting together, and then she moves in to our house. She moves in. And then they start getting a little serious. And then next thing you know, she starts bringing home. This is like pre-internet stuff.
Literally,
kind of, pre-internet. Because she would bring home pre-Craigslist newspapers. Pre-Craigslist
or anything like that. Yeah, there was all newspapers.
She'd bring home newspapers with apartments for lease circled. And she would go, oh, hey, I was looking through the paper and I saw there were some really cute apartments available.
To you?
To me.
It was a real weird thing, though, man. Well, because it was like she was jealous, like, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, if jealous, am I wrong
and
to say this?
And then what happened?
But no,
Joe kicked out the wrong one.
But I kicked out the one that wasn't putting out. Yes. You know
so
how it is.
Stupid.
But isn't it weird, though, how she was jealous? Like, if she thought something was going on, jealous. Yeah. Like, not jealous of you
she,
just
like,
taking my time.
Out, like,
like, she looked at Angela like, oh, you guys have something weird. But here's the funny part about that. It happened several times throughout our lives.
Yeah.
We'd be walking around the mall, dog. Like, Angela was a young little girl when I was in San Jose, and I was working on Hot 97.7 and Wild 94.9, all these stations. But we'd always kick it. So, like, I'd bring little Ann, we'd be walking through the mall, and I'd be holding her hand, because you know how your wife is? Holding hands, just lovey-dovey. So I'm holding her hands, just like earlier today where I'm hugging you as walking in
with,
to the park.
And you were with, I remember you were with Selena at the time, and somebody called the radio station to snitch on Joe.
That I'm holding some girl's hand.
I saw
up with
Joe holding some girl's hand at East Ridge Mall.
Like,
and then he's like,
oh,
that was Ange. And Selena was right there with us.
It was just so weird and awkward that, I guess just twice it's happened in our lives where people, like somebody snitched on me like that and Nadia felt that way, which is just weird that, you know, the loving connection that we have, anybody can think that just, it's just want to punch them in the face and you're like, you're ridiculous. What is your problem?
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that closeness that we've had for so many years, because at that time I might have been 21, 22 years old, maybe, or whatever
right.
It was. It
was,
it was
a teenager. I was young.
Yeah, she was very, very young. I mean, she was like hardcore troll.
Well, if you were
fighting.
21, I was like 7.
Here we go! 11! So maybe I wasn't 21, because you wouldn't have been 11. There's a 10-year difference. But yeah, that was a good time.
Man, that's crazy. So you got kicked out?
So I get kicked out. They get married. That didn't last very long. It wasn't
a whole 1 year?
To.
A 1 year.
A whole 1 year.
Wait, did you already have Nia at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Nia's
yeah.
story's a good one. Story.
Okay. Well, let's get to this one. Okay. So you are sober. You get fired from Bay Area Radio, right? You
right.
move to L.A. and you end up working for the biggest radio station out here, morning show, Big Boys Neighborhood. Tell us a little bit about that journey and how that the season after that.
So it's so funny because, you know, you look at the cliche when one door closes, another one opens, you know, and as long as you're prepared in life to do things, you know, so even myself, like I'm always kind of doing content for the show that I'm working with now. We're kind of creating content all the time. And I always tell these guys, we have to be ready. Like, luck doesn't happen. You have to be good. You have to be ready for these things to happen. Where's your content? What are you showing? So my point behind that is when I got fired for a stupid reason in San Francisco, my content's there. You know what I do. I'm prepared to work anywhere, God willing. But, you know, and I knew and felt that I was good. So I was a little fearful, but not too much. So I get fired, and then I go golfing the next day, and I get a call on the golf course, and it's from Power 106, a guy by the name of Rick Cummings, who's a big programming director for MS Communications. And Joe, I heard they let you go over there at Wild 94. And I go, yeah, what are you doing? I'm just golfing. He's like, yeah, well, you know, I'd love to talk with you and have you come in and meet with Jimmy Steele, who's the program director, and Big Boy, and Jason Ryan, who's the producer. Big Boy's the radio talent. I'm like, I know who Big Boy is. Damn it. Big morning show in L.A. Wow, I got fired and just got a call. I got fired from the number 4 market in the country and got a call from the number 2 market in the country. How do you jump up, right? Like, you think, oh, I got fired from my job. It's a curse. It's the worst. Wherever there's that, baby, there's always a blessing. You just don't know how that blessing's going to come.
Yeah.
So I fly out. They put me up in a hotel. I meet with them. And the meeting went well, and it was funny because Big Boy was very hesitant because at that time, I may have only been sober about 3-4 years, not that long. Not enough for everyone to realize that I've been sober, especially in the industry. And in the industry, meaning radio and morning show industry, I was notoriously known for being a loose cannon, crazy, and I'm still quick-wit on my mouth and my tongue and could be a little bit, I mean, I wasn't afraid to put hands on somebody, and I did these things called Battle of the Big Boys, which Veronica, your sister-in-law, actually sang at one of my Battle of the Big Boys that I fought at. And these would be these sold-out events where I would call out any listener listening, saying, if you could hear my voice, I bet I could beat you up. Because I was a bouncer before I got into Radio Dog, so I was never afraid to put my hands on somebody. You know what I mean? So I'd fight people, and so people would be like, dude, this guy's crazy. Who is this dude, right? So then when Big Boy heard that I was coming, He repeated all those things to me. He goes, because of all those things you did, I thought you was just too much of a loose cannon that you wouldn't understand being a chemistry part of our show, whatever. Yeah. But I came in sober and a different cat, and we finally met and we hit it off. And it was crazy because as we hit it off, he was like, Joe, if this works between us, that means I got to fire somebody. Like, and this is my crew that I've had since Jump Street in here.
Wow.
But the program directors, they're trying to put together a show. And they know you bring show. So I go home. Let me think about this. Can you come out, Joe, another week? So I come out another week. We hit some corners. We eat. I go on the air with them. This was before we were going to go on the air. So he liked me when we just had chemistry. We broke bread. I think I went to a nightclub with them. He wanted to see me in different environments, see how I would act. And he's like, okay, you're cool. Let me see. You know, so I come back the next week. I go on air with them. On-air chemistry was ridiculous. It just clicked on. I know how to come on a show and know my roles and know what we're doing, and I can jump in and see what you're doing, and okay, cool. I know what we're doing. I know radio. I do radio. So we hit it off. He was like, damn, we did a whole week with all these different segments, and I would go out on the streets and record things and do this and do that. And he goes, all right, I'm gonna hit you back. So I fly home after that week, and he calls me and goes, look, man, we're about to do this, but I got to make some changes here for you to come in. So he had to let one of his cats go. And so it was like a weird dynamic once I came in, even from that dynamic, because that's his boy forever. And now we're all good friends still because he understood the business aspect of it, right? But it was crazy. And then I came in and worked with him for years. And right when I came in here, that station was big, but he wasn't number one. And then I came in there and we made Power 106 the number one ranked morning show in Los Angeles. So it was crazy that my chemistry came from making a number one show in the Bay Area to here. So when I say that, I don't even know if you guys know this dynamic of number one morning shows. I worked with Big for about 8 years. We killed it. I started doing sports on the show. One day I literally go, Doug, maybe I should do a sports segment. They go, can you? Write one up. I wrote up a sports segment. Before you know it, I'm the sports director at Power 106, the biggest hip-hop station in Los Angeles. That's how you see all this stuff around this room, because I interviewed all these players, and I do all these things. Well, if you're such a sports reporter, Joe, this is how my first interview with Kobe went. If you're such a sports reporter, why don't you go to the Laker locker room and interview Kobe? Okay, I bet I can. Why couldn't I? I could do anything. You know who I am? So I literally go to the locker room not knowing anything. And I don't know etiquette. I'm in like the big, it's like hip-hop joke. Big old baggy shorts, long t-shirt, all big. I walk in. Where's Kobe at? Thinking, you know, he's just going to talk to me. Or I just want to get an interview so I can get out of here. And they're like, Kobe, don't do interview before the games. I'm like, you don't? Well, you want me to stay till the end of the game? I got to wake up early, dog. I got to do morning radio. I'm not trying to stay till the end of the game. What's your problem? I'm not, I mean, I don't know etiquette. And where's he at? I see Kobe. Hey, Kobe, what up, dog? It's Joe Grande from Power 106. He goes, Joe Grande, what's up, dog? Blah, blah. Like, I'm like, wait a minute. He just didn't act like he knows who I am. Before you know it, the other cats, that's Joe Grande. Hey, what up, Joe Grande? All these cats listen to Power 106 in the morning, which I just didn't put in my head that they would be right. Listeners.
Yeah.
So all these cats were like fans and treated me as such. Real cool. To where I'm doing things with Shaq at his parties and this and that and all these events. And it was just like nutty, right? And I remember getting this interview with Kobe at the beginning of the game. And I'm like, that's kind of weird that I just talked to Kobe Bryant so much. And one of the guys comes and goes, how'd you get that interview with him? I go, I just asked him. He's like, you know, he doesn't do interviews. Like, well, I don't know that. I don't know. I just asked and he did it for me. So that got our relationship going. Then about a few months after that, Jennifer Lopez opens up her new restaurant, Madre's, in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. Kobe walks the red carpet. We get there. He's at the end of the red carpet. Of course, you can see this six, you know, monster at the end of the red carpet. And then he sees us. Joe Grande! Hey, I'm doing interviews, right? So Big Boy's Neighborhood, we're doing interviews like Entertainment Tonight, like all these outlets. And he's yelling my name. And I'm like, this is very dope. I'm not going to lie. This is like one of the dopest things ever. So I finally get over there. And right before that, I literally did this like cap off session with him where like I was in the locker room and I was making fun of his hair. Like, dude, does anybody ever confuse you for Gary Gnu when you're rolling down the 405 with that helmet you have on your head? Because he had the fro, right? And even he's like, dude, no one's just coming here and start capping on me like that. No one's done that. I go, what do you mean? No one's making fun of your bump on your forehead right there? Is that your twin that you brought with? Just, you know how I am. Just an idiot like that, right? Just attacking all his physical features. You know, is it hard to see you at night? You ever get scared? Just borderline racist, jokey with them. He's capping back on me. Does anybody ever call you Sergeant Slugger? Just like making fun of me, calling me a sergeant because I had like a whatever hair and... Hit it up. We're just having a blast together. Just doing stupid interview talk, which wasn't your normal. So now that you scored 40 points this game, right. Did you feel like blah, blah, blah. So he's yelling at me. And my point behind that is when I finally get over there, he goes, Joe, this is my wife, Vanessa. Babe, this is Joe Grande. We're telling you about Steve's an idiot, whatever. And because I just made fun of him the day before he went home and was telling her all about it. And she was like, dude, he was telling me you guys were killing each other, like just going at each other. And then me and her become buddies. And it's so like that whole Power thing was dope. And then I leave Power and I go to Kiss FM to work with Ryan Seacrest. So I actually quit Power 106. And that was a very
dramatic
move where nobody was happy about that from Power. But at the time, Clear Channel wanted to pull me away and break up Power 106's Big Boys Neighborhood because we were killing everybody's show. And Ryan Seacrest was already on the air. You know, everybody was trying to get their morning show, but our ratings were so high. How can we break up the show? So here's the crazy part about this. It's just ironic. I go to Ryan Seacrest's show and I start doing sports full time. So I did a sports afternoon show and they put a studio in my house and I started doing a morning show from my house and I go to the studio every once in a while to meet with Ryan and this and that. But once I got on Ryan's show, it became number one rated morning show in Los Angeles.
Dang.
It was really weird. Really weird. And something that I don't talk about too much because I don't like to sit there and stroke my own ego and tell people. I go, it's just ironic when I tell people that I really want to share some randomness. Dude, I played a part in it. I played a part in number one biggest shows in the number four market and the number two market in the country. And till this day, I believe I still get that respect in these markets. Hence, I got my show that I'm on, Cannabis Talk 101, a contract with iHeart because they know my history. And when I brought them a show, they knew, well, let's take a look at the show. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like, oh, who are you? Or we're not taking a meeting. No. I got something for you now. So after that, I went to NBC Sports. Well, I got fired from Clear Channel as well, and that was then when the market crashed everywhere in the country in 08. And, you know, I thought, what's going to happen? When once again, the whole cliche, this too shall pass. It's not like, You know, and when 08 happened, I lost a couple homes. I lost all kinds of stuff, which I got more stuff again. But it's like, well, whatever. I get to take a leave of absence because that's what God wants. And then I worked at NBC after that. And then when I was working at NBC, I was doing national sports reports for like 480 stations. And it was great. It was cool. But then I moved to Orange County. And then I quit that thinking, I need to quit working there so that I can be more with my family. Because my wife just had our second kid. And I can't be traveling back and forth from Orange County to LA. I need to be present with my family. They need me. So I looked at it like hanging up my cleats. I was like, I'm not going to do radio no more. And I didn't. And I started doing a regular job selling insurance for AAA. And I thought, you know, there it is. I'm done. I got me a job. And went through all kinds of things and said, you know what? This too shall pass.
How hard of a decision was that for you, having you just told all of us here these amazing stories, amazing success stories
that I could have still been doing if I never wanted to, if I never stopped?
Yeah. So how hard of a decision was that for you to make, and what was that like?
It brings a tear to my eye because I'm about to say the truth, and it's like, I'll do whatever my family needs me to do. And all this stuff that I did is a job. It was great. It was fun. And I love it. As you can see, Joe Montana writing Go Cowgirls, because I told him I hate him when I'm a Cowboy fan, and this and that, to all these great stories. So I know how to interact with people and bring a character to my that who I am. But when it comes down to what do you need to do for your family, that's what comes first. And my family needed medical insurance. That was the real key reason why. That was like a major factor. I need medical insurance for my family. I no longer have it because I'm working, doing this NBC thing, but they're not giving me my full package that I'm used to getting. They were just contracting me. And my wife, she has her doctorate and she's a physical therapist, but she works under her license and she doesn't work for some company that gave us insurance. So it was like, we got to pay or come out the pocket so much. I'm like, you know what? Let me just put a monkey suit on and go do what I have to do. And when I say it was hard, and when you ask how hard it was, I talked a lot with my sponsor at the time, and I realized that, you know what? My job's a radio personality, but I work for God, and I'm a family man, and that's what I need to do. So I work for God, not NBC, not iHeart, not Steve, not anybody. I work for God. And if God needs me to be home with my family and take care of things, then that's what I got to do. Doesn't mean it wasn't hard, but that was the talks that I had with myself that made me realize I can do that. And then as I did that, as my wife explained to you guys earlier today, what she hears and I forget and block it out, ironically, block out the, that was the worst I was in my life. I wasn't happy. I wasn't treating her as well, she says. I wasn't doing all these things. I mean, I think she's lying still, but that's what she says. But my point is, it shows if you're not doing the things that you like and love, and you know, but you got to compromise. And you know, to me, I had to compromise, and I did. And it wasn't easy, but this too shall pass. And that season passed. And, you know, now I'm doing bigger things again that I hope pop again. And I believe will, because I have a track record of doing big things. It's not like, oh, do I or do I not see it? Do I not feel it? No, I feel it and see it wholeheartedly, but it took me a long time to even get back in the saddle of, okay, I want to do radio again. I want to entertain. I want to, you know, I mean, as it is, I'd go into Target and just make fun of somebody. I do it all the time, but I would even do it by myself where I'm just making myself laugh and I'm okay with that. And you know, and my biggest thing is, as you guys have seen, where we all been staying at my house the last few nights, I love putting my kids to bed at night. I love holding my son and praying with him every night and asking him, was your day good? Was, you know, most of the time, because he's crabby, it's a little later. But a lot of times I get a lot of good things out of him, but he always gets to hear me pray. And I feel like what I've learned in my life and my spiritual walk, the man needs to be the spiritual leader in the household. And I'm teaching that in my household. My house, you know, I'm trying to do as best as I can. I'm far from a perfect man, but me being able to do that, me being able to know when if my kids are in the room and I say in Jesus' name, their next words out of their mouth are amen. They know that I must have said a prayer somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you better know your calling when daddy speaks.
Yeah.
And I'm praying and I get wrap it up and say in Jesus' name. And it's simple things like that, that I feel like that's what I want to be. That's who I've learned to be, a quote unquote player of this, of that, of yada, 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 have money, have stuff. But it's like, okay, cool. What does that do?
What I was having a great conversation with your wife. We were talking about her interaction with certain other moms here that they're going through different seasons and still trying to hold on to the last season where they had money, still trying to hold on to the image of what it looks like to have money. And even though they're in a season where the money ain't there and they're holding it on. And when I hear you talk about, you know, going through these seasons of like plenty and then totally going in lack and totally seeing as this is just, this is life and I'm just embracing it. I don't know a lot of people that can embrace. And I said it earlier. I was like, I don't want to go backwards.
And what I say,
you said something phenomenal. It's like life, you can never go backwards in life. You only go to the right, to the left, down the stream of life. It's like a stream.
Yeah. You're not going backwards, dog. You ain't going backwards. You're going this way, you're going that way, but you ain't going backwards.
Yeah.
Because when the sheriff put the letter on my door, on my garage door to get the hell out of that house, that wasn't backwards. I moved from there to Marina Del Rey from Santa Clarita.
Yeah,
and I rented a place. Cool. Well, you owned a rent. Is that backwards? No, it's just this way. Right. It ain't backwards. Right. And then I went and rented a condo. It ain't backwards. It's this way in Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird. I feel like somebody needs to hear that, because I feel like people think that because they're not doing their optimal or because they were doing it and now they're not, mm-hmm. that they've taken steps back. And just, I've thought it before.
We all kind of, you can look at it that
you
way.
You thought it this morning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like looking at Angela's water glass right now and saying she's only got a little in there. No, she's got plenty in there right now. She could use more.
I mean, I got about two sips.
I mean, but you know what I mean? Is the glass half empty or is there some water in it? No, there's water in it. Mm-hmm. It ain't empty. You know, it's how we look at it. It's almost like looking at life through a new set of glasses, looking at it with a different point of view, knowing that this too shall pass, speaking the right words, the negative of, it's such a simple comment of I'm going backwards. Why? Because I didn't have what I've had before, because last year I made six figures and this year I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, is that backwards? No, it's a different year. It's a different time. It's not backwards. It's just a different year. There's nothing that says you need to make more money every single year. Mm. Where does it say that? Mm. Who says that? We all want to be successful, but it doesn't mean it's backwards. It means you made less money. It's not backwards. It's not negative. Mm. Why? Because I have to always get more and more and more what? Stuff? Mm. What stuff? Are we teaching more? Are we helping our family? And even the most important, the ones closest to us. Are we teaching the ones closest to us the most? Are we praying with each other? Are we speaking the word to each other? Are we trying to walk our walk and talk our talk? Or am I just talking shit and you're going to see me out here you hooking up with some chick? By far, you're not, God willing.
Hmm.
You ain't going to see me yelling at somebody and flashing. I mean, unless they did something to my kid or something. But most part, I mean, I'm far from perfect, but my point is, are you living your life right? Can people sit there and say, who is this guy? Who is this girl? That's the abundance. That's more money every year. That's going forward. You could be broke and treat people great, or you could be rich and be a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Now who, what you doing? And which direction you going? Because I've been broke, and I've had a lot of money, and I'm, and it doesn't matter. Are you good to people? Where are you at? Can you sit there and realize and have empathy and sympathy for people who don't? If you have it and compassion, be like, man, I feel you. We all got, you know, this too shall pass, homie. Good luck. I've been there. And if you think this is so bad that I want to kill myself because it's so terrible, that is a permanent solution for a temporary problem that will not solve anything ever. Mm-hmm. Or I want to take all these pills. I want to do all these drugs. I just want to drink so hard. that's really not going to solve anything right now at any point in time in your life. This too shall pass, just like I called that guy Jim when I picked up my big book, Call Someone, because the power of talking to somebody and speaking to somebody will help you. And if that person is a jerk to you, then call someone else. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect every time. You may get somebody on the wrong time, it happens. But don't let the devil say, nope, shut up, get in your hole, kill yourself, you're done, you're a dummy, you're a piece of shit. No, you're not. We're all worth it.
Yeah.
And if we could all strive to, which if you're listening to this podcast, you're striving to be a better person. You listen to Manuel and Angela because you know they have people and they're people who encourage people and try to do the right things all the time. And that's what this is about here. And that's why we're talking in this way. And we all like to have fun and do different things. And we all strive to be the best we can. And so should everyone out there. I'm not saying don't try to make more money every year. I'm not saying don't try to push yourself to get more money. I'm saying don't beat yourself up if you don't.
Yeah.
Don't look at yourself as you went backwards and you're a loser. You're not. It's a different direction. It's a different year. Everything's different. You tried. If you sat there and said, did I try? Yeah. Did you try hard? Yeah. We probably all can try harder. Let's just face that, guys. There's no denying that. None of us can sit and say, I can't. No, we all can. Okay, fine. Once again, none of us are perfect. We can only stride each day to try to do the best.
Yeah.
And maybe the next day you try harder.
Yeah. No, I meant a lot because it definitely spoke to me and it felt real. It kind of readjusted my sight for this year coming up, you know?
Really? That much?
Well, yeah, because it's, I mean, here's the honest truth. I don't think I felt the depth of what I was saying. I thought I was just saying something like very, as a matter
cliche.
Of fact.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't want to go backwards, you know, because I just see it as the money in the bank. If I have less than I did the year before, I'm like, oh, I'm going backwards, you know. But I guess the comfort or ease that you communicate, you going through these seasons, it's quite challenging because, to be honest, okay, we've both been poor before, but since we've been married, we've only multiplied every year, just keep getting bigger. I don't know if it's just poor people, but there's always this looming fear of like, it's all going to end or it's going to dry up or somehow, some way,
you know,
but, it can't
and
be this
and
good.
That's that fear though, dog, that like I get in my head and I go, I grew up on fideo, beans and rice and just pour as much as you can food that we got to make it stretch. And literally, like I said, my mom was disabled. So I was on food stamps as long as I can remember. I got lunch. We used to get the big slab of bolognese that we used to get sliced, the free cheese. I got free lunch tickets. I went to college for free. Like everything was given to me because I was so broke. As a family growing up, you know what I had in that house? A lot of love. I was still my mama's corazoncito, her mijo, her corazón, which means her heart, her soul, and everything. And she loved me like no other. Still a lot of dysfunctional, still a lot of craziness. But I got that love that allows me to give that love now. And when my aunt sees me now, my only aunt that's alive, she goes, mijo, you're just like your mother. And that's with no money. So don't let money think, and it's the root of all evil. You know, we all want it and we all strive for it. Don't think, oh my God, this year is going to be less, when you don't know for a fact it is just because I don't have what I had planned last year, this year.
Yeah. And I think it's more so, you know, I'm the least person that, like, I don't care about money like that. Like, I appreciate the stuff that we have. But I always tell my wife, I'm like, babe, if I had to go back, you know, my favorite house to this day is our little 1,200 square foot in Nashville. I love it. I love being there. It's the smallest house that we own. And I love it. I'm realizing that stuff doesn't mean anything to me. I think when you stop and you take inventory on what's important to you, you have to ask yourself the hard questions. And I know I was talking to you earlier because I was talking to my business manager. I was like, I'm going to get rid of my car this year. She's like, well, you don't have to. You can afford your car. And I'm like, yeah, but you know
just
what?
Just stop shopping, you bougie mofo.
Yeah, she just said I got to stop shopping. But I was like, you know what? I want to do it because I want to make sure that nothing has a hold on me.
Like, I want to make sure that I want to check in with myself and make sure that I don't think I'm something because of my things. And so I'm selling all my clothes. You know, I'm getting rid of my car because I really want to, I want to check my heart and check the type of person that I am. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to take a real quick break for 2 seconds.
Joe in his old age just has the bladder of like a 2-year-old.
He's going to make it quick.
Bring me some water while you're gone.
But right, babe? Like, I feel like it's like, I don't know. I really feel like this year is going to be like a year of the things that I'm even thinking of that I think this year is starting off with that I'm challenging myself. I don't know if those are the things that God, and it's always happened. I don't know if those are the things that God's trying to show me. Hmm. I think as the year progresses, I'm going to be learning stuff that I didn't even know was there. Mm-hmm. The more conversations we have, the more the year goes on and we, I don't know what we'll encounter. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying we're going to encounter negative things.
I think that's part of the reason why I was saying earlier that I am I'm hesitant to establish vision for the year, like with a vision board, because not only do I like not know what I want, I don't feel grace on my life to like start declaring things that I want. I feel like I'm in a season of rest and connection.
And how about too though, Ange? How about this visions. Too though? There's no right or wrong way to live your life. There's just a suggestion to have a vision board. Like, and it's so much of a newer term that these public speakers come out with it, the vision board. If you don't have one, you're a piece of crap and you're not living your life to the fullest. Shut your mouth. Who are you to say this and dictate this on me and make me feel, Angela Nicole Johnson, that I'm not doing righteous by not spending enough time? It may help, and I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm not saying
and
it doesn't.
And there's even like the...
But there's no like you have to.
Well, so in the Bible, it talks about where there is no vision, the people will perish.
Well,
so
who knows if that's true? They cut the people's tongues off after they wrote the book.
So there's the idea of you set a goal and you go for it. Like have plans for your life and they may change along the way because that's how life works and that's okay. But there's something to be said for seeing it, visualizing it. Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about seeing that in your mind and your body. I forget all the eloquent words that he uses, but basically your mind feeling like you are already living the life that you want as you then step into that life, like you're manifesting that life into reality. So there is something to be said for vision. And I love to have vision and put goals up and be able to look and check things off and be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing that actually
happened.
But
I feel like you're beating yourself up because you're not. And there's something to be said there that you should not do. Just because you're not doing that, and I'm not disagreeing with you, you're right. That is a good thing and it's a great thing. And God bless those who all do. But because you're not at this moment in your time, does not mean you're doing something wrong, and nor should you have this tone in your voice of that you're doing something wrong or condemning yourself or beating yourself up, because I'm not there right now and I'm at a stage where I'm just trying to focus on my inner chi and find me. There's nothing wrong with that to where I feel like I've been hearing from you that you have this guilt of like, I don't have that vision right now. So what? Don't feel the guilt of it. And that's what I want to tell you, that like there's nothing to feel guilty about because I don't have it right now. Cool. I'm working on me right now and all that's going to come.
Yeah.
And don't feel the sadness of it. Be, you know what? I think you should realize I don't have it right now. It should be a smile, not a, I don't have it right now. And I'm looking for it. And I know I need to write my goals down. You know what? I don't know what I want to do next year. And it feels awesome.
I think I'm definitely coming to terms with that, exactly what you're saying, and being okay with the fact that I don't have the vision right now, and that's okay. And what's funny, is because as we were ending last year and coming into the new year, I was like, 2020, perfect vision, let's go. And then turns out I'm like,
Where's my glasses?
I don't have no vision.
The same thing happened to me when I finished Groupon. The same thing. It took me a little bit. It took me like a couple months to just settle into not doing anything because it's like 14 years of nonstop touring. No vacations. No anything.
I mean, and that's when you guys can really sit there and say, you know what gets to happen then? That's when really gets to happen is God's plan.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be Drake right now, but yeah. God's plan.
Drake be peaching.
You know what I'm saying? And like when that happens, that's a whole different season because like I feel like God plans happen sometime when y'all came out here to stay with me and we didn't know. And there's been so much ministry and speaking going on. It wasn't planned. Mm-hmm. You just said these words may change your whole outlook on your year.
Right.
You didn't plan your year to look at it differently. You were looking at it this way. Mm-hmm. But God's plan had us together. Who knows where you're going to be next weekend? Who knows where you're going to be? I know where you're going to be tomorrow, but I don't know where you're going to be next weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like when you don't have this, I got to do this. I want to do it. You know, we all, especially us talking amongst us three and probably everyone listening, we all want to be successful. But like I said earlier, I work for God is what I realize. And if we all realize I want to work for God first and be successful at everything that he wants me to be, then that's when I'm successful. And guess what? Being successful at what God wants us to be, it could be a dad. It could be a wife. It could be a son. It could be a daughter. It could be a friend. It could be a pet walker. It could be whatever the hell it is that you're doing that's helping somebody else out. Because bottom line, the best thing we could always do for someone is be of service wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. I'm here to serve you. I'm a servant of God. And of course, I want to be successful and all this stuff. But when I notice when I'm more of service is when more things happen for me.
Yeah, that's true.
And that to me is always, and I believe right now, it's giving you the time to be of service. Mm. And when you're of service, the abundance comes tenfold.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, that's what I love when God hits our guts like this. Like we didn't plan exactly to talk about things like these. And when the anointment comes out and you leave ourselves vulnerable to say these types of things and feel these types of things is when we get to feel it. It's weird. It's great.
I love it, bro. This is just an overflow of the conversations we've been having all weekend. So I appreciate you taking time. It's late over here. I know we are tired. Super Bowl's tomorrow.
Joe, as we close out, do you have the audio or any audio from your interview with Kobe since we talked about...
I do. I do have some audio of Kobe Bryant. I sure do. Would you like me to play some of it?
As we close out this episode here with my cousin Joe, Big Joe, Joe Grande, Joe Lopez, whatever you want to call him. Just don't call him after 11 p.m.
That's always weird when that happens. Like, why are you calling me this late? What is wrong with you?
Thank you for being on our podcast. And everybody, check out Cannabis Talk 101. Where can they find that?
Yeah, so Cannabis Talk 101, myself, Joe Grande, Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law, and Mr. Christopher Wright Blue. We all do a show called Cannabis Talk 101, and it is an extremely awesome show that is like your... kind of like your ESPN, your Fox Sports of cannabis news. And we are on 101.5 FM KOCI Radio in Los Angeles. And then on 4/20/2020, we actually get premiered on the iHeartRadio app, which will be premiered all over the country. So we are the only cannabis talk show signed with iHeartRadio doing a podcast, which is a big accomplishment, which is another thing of like, you know, something that I didn't plan on, something I didn't think of, something I really didn't have on my vision board. Not whatsoever, but whatsoever. You know what I mean?
Who would have thought at 21 years in sober, you would start a...
I didn't start it. I went to this show and I started talking to these guys. And I believe in cannabis as far as medicinal use. I believe in the benefits of CBD. I take CBD. I use the oils on my body. I've had 2 hip surgeries. I'm a blue handicapper. I mean, I've literally banged up on the knees and all this body stuff. So I do tinctures, I do rubs, I do CBD edibles, I smoke CBD, but it doesn't have, you know, enough THC to get you high. So it's not like I'm sitting there doing anything right. to jeopardize what I consider my program. To each their own with their own program. I'm not right. judging you if that's what you do do. God bless you. But for me and my program, I use complete abstinence of drugs and alcohol at every level. So, and I speak on that on my show, and I talk about the medical use of it. That's what I'm for. And even if somebody wants to smoke a joint here and there to calm down, I'd rather have somebody smoke a joint than drink a bottle of wine and jump in a car.
Right.
Or do anything. Or be at my house. Or be anywhere. Let's go smoke a joint in the back. Go smoke. I'll smoke a cigar. Let's hang out. I'm cool. So I'm so pro cannabis. Even since all the times I've been sober, I've never felt like, oh, it's your stepping stone drug. You're going to do cannabis and then you're doing meth and then you're a whore. It's like,
yeah,
I don't look at cannabis that way whatsoever. So it's a great talk show. Like I said, and for those who want to listen to it, please find the podcast or feel listen or find me at Joe Grande 52 on Instagram. Or you can come to my house in Rancho Santa Margarita while I have
it. I hate you so much.
You hate me all the time.
Oh, God.
So I'll play this Kobe piece for you guys.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the 9 lives that were lost Sunday morning in a helicopter accident. Among those on the flight was Los Angeles Laker legend Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna. We as fans will all miss Kobe so much. You might remember hearing Joe Grande's interview with Kobe Bryant on Power 106 with Big Boy's Neighborhood.
What city do you hate playing in?
Utah.
Why?
I don't know. I just hate going there, man. I don't like them as a team too much.
Especially a city you might get lynched or something or what?
You know what I'm saying?
What about Philly, though? That bunch of haters over there, even though you're from there. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, I enjoy going back, though.
Well, who would you say is probably the best friend on the team?
My best friend on the team? I have a lot of them. I know Brian Shaw since I was 10 years old. I've known him. He played against my pops.
Damn.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
You just aged Shaw right there.
Hey, you know, I've known him for a long, long time. Derek Fisher and I have been together since 96. Shaquille and I are great friends. This is a pretty close group overall.
I got to ask you, what would be your favorite movie, Kobe?
Godfather.
Godfather.
It's got to be. It's classic.
We send our thoughts and prayers to all the families that lost someone in this tragic, senseless accident.
What's up, y'all? This is Kobe Bryant, and you're listening to my man, my dude, Joe Grande.
Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, Gianna Bryant, John Altobelli, Carrie Altobelli, Alyssa Altobelli, Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, Ara Zobian.
Heading fast down the highway, I can't even see straight. I'm just leaving your place. Hate that I still feel this way. I ain't even tried to. I fell around and got inside you. Came and went like a haiku.
Like a haiku.
And I chew my shot with you, but you are bulletproof. I know you noticed losing focus, and I chew my shot with you, but you are bulletproof. I know you noticed I'm losing focus.
Oh, yeah.
So what you gonna do now?
Yeah,
baby, what you gonna do?
driving down memory lane. The fact I knew you for a while kinda drives me insane. Took you flirting with this dude to add salt to the pain. I'm not poor, so didn't know that when it pours, it rains. Cusack outside your house, cause I'll say anything. Paying for these small mistakes, that's a minimum wage. I can handle failing if I try, but didn't agree. But we ain't even spent the day exploring what we could be. And I chew my shot with you, but you are bulletproof. I know you notice I'm losing focus. And I chew my shot with you, but you are bulletproof. I know you notice I'm losing focus. So what you gonna do now? Yeah. Baby, what you gonna do now?